But I was trying to understand, what does it mean to be depressed? What is depression about? And why does it take so long to heal depression? I mean, people who are in the therapy and being psychologists, they know this. Depression has a habit of coming back, a guest that never leaves your house. And once you know the Bill of Rights, people literally, what happened, they have epiphany and they use a lot of curse words. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh. People are awakened. And once you go claim those rights, there's seven of them, you literally will see depression dissipates and will turn to energy. And you will wake up one day, you're not depressed.
Welcome to Linda's Corner, where we bring more hope, healing, and happiness to the world. My name is Linda Bjork, and today we're going to be talking about emotional well-being and growth. I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Ardashir Mehran. Dr. Mehran is a psychologist, best-selling author, behavioral researcher, and the founder of the Bill of Emotional Rights. You can reach Dr. Mehran at his website, humanworkstudio.com, and I'll include a link in the show notes. Welcome. I'm so glad that you could join with me today.
Thank you so much, Linda. I'm so happy to be joining you and your listener and look forward to our conversation.
And I am excited because I am excited to learn from you today. I so enjoyed researching and preparing and checking out your website. And I thought that your Bill of Emotional Rights was absolutely brilliant. And I loved how at the top of the page, it said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Yes. And I can see the image of it behind you where you have it on the wall here.
Yes.
So I would love if you would walk through these rights.
Yes.
That we know we want them.
Yeah.
But we don't know that we have a right to them.
That's
and
right.
How to meet them. So
That's right.
Is going to be good.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. And you know, maybe just in terms of context, to you and listener, go do a search about what does mental illness mean. And you will get vast, literally exhaustible data, depression, anxiety, bipolar, schizophrenia, misery, so on, so on. Then do another search. What does it mean to be emotionally healthy? Things will get weird. Things, they become fragmented, it becomes opinion. And we get a bit of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, a bit of Viktor Frankl about the man's search for meaning. But you will learn that we as humans across centuries, we didn't spend time thinking about what do people need to be healthy? That's my work. And I stumbled upon this. And you can call me accidental explorer. And I'm a psychologist, went to graduate school, got my doctorate, triple major, that four masters, a lot of certifications. But I was trying to understand, what does it mean to be depressed? What is depression about? And why does it take so long to heal depression? I mean, people who are in the therapy and being a psychologist, they know this. Depression has a habit of coming back, a guest that never leaves your house. You can medicate it. I've been to seven psychologists over the years, psychiatrists, taking medication, being a good patient, and only to see my old friend comes back. And learned at a certain point was my mother's struggle. My dad struggled, brother, sister. And when I've been to corporate environment, behind the closed doors, a lot of my conversation was, I was a corporate executive, business transformation. A lot of meetings that I had, people would say, Ardashir, can I speak with you? Then conversation, they wouldn't share with their spouses, with their therapists, with others, and there was private struggles. And I was just thinking, why is that? Why we bring so much personal hurt and suffering, but when we go outside, we have a smile on our face. We look great. We smell great. We dress us up great. It was my story. While I was going corporate, up the corporate ladder, making a lot of money, I was a role model. People would tell me I'm the life of the party. But they didn't realize I was suffering. I was dead inside. I would hold my wife and would tell her, honey, I love you. I couldn't feel anything. I would hold my son was born. Says, I was telling David, I love you. I couldn't feel anything. And I come to realize many people, especially high achievers, executives, entrepreneurs, founders, they have higher rates of depression, anxiety, bipolar, suicide, substance abuse than average population. I got tired of that. And then I learned across the years, this is discovery comes in. When I was in graduate school, my very first patients in Bellevue Psychiatric Hospital in New York City, somehow they were always giving me the difficult patients. Maybe they thought I can handle things that I learned when they talk about their struggles. If you listen, they were telling a story of a person lost, person being violated, the needs they wanted, what they were searching in life, they didn't have it. They were looking for the yellow brick road. Something's out there. I want it. And it looks further and further each day. So I started to listen. What is it they're seeing, they're wanting, they're longing for? And this took 30 years. And I learned when people are struggling, especially depression, and I will talk about why depression. Depression at its core is about yearning, about longing, about mourning of something lost, something that you know you need to have somewhere along the life in your life never happened. And I learned that when I worked at hundreds and hundreds of people, the stories look different. The language, the examples, who did what to whom, it's different, but the core of the story is the same. People were looking for something. And I modeled that and worked with children all the way to 70-year-old grandmother for therapy. And I learned that people are seeking something and they know it as human, they deserve it. And I started about 10 years ago at the depth of my struggle, that seven emotional rights that we know these rights belong to us. Parents don't give it to us. Teachers, politicians, neighbors, we are born to experience them in life. They are as essential as our civic and DNA structure. So when people call me and says, Ardeshir, I'm so depressed. And I tell them, dear friend, what it means that there's some basic emotional needs for you in life, they didn't happen. Didn't happen the way you wanted it, or they were violated, or nobody told you that you can have this in your life. And you come to tolerate that you can be in a loveless relationship, in a job that sucks your soul, or you can just be a cog in the wheel of something that, no, you were born, and I tell people, either Michael Jordan or Serena Williams inside you. You were born great. You have all the things that you need. Nobody told you that. And once you know the Bill of Rights, people literally what happened, they have epiphany and they use a lot of curse words. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. People are awakened. And once you go claim those rights, there's seven of them. You literally will see depression dissipates and will turn to energy. And you will wake up one day. You're not depressed. You're pissed. You don't want to waste time anymore.
I just want to cheer. That is so beautiful and it is so amazing. And what's more, it is so true. These are universal truths.
Yes.
Things that we are longing for. Now, as I'm listening to the story, and I have the list here, so I know what they are, and we haven't talked about them yet. So people who are listening don't know what they are, but you and I know what they are. Yeah. That these rights, these needs, you said that we need them, and that it wasn't something that our parents are supposed to. I mean, it's not like a privilege that someone gives, says, oh, you are allowed to have XYZ. We need them.
Yeah.
We have a right to them. Again, at the beginning, you said we hold these truths to be self-evident. And somewhere along the line, through our experiences, we either didn't get it or it was violated.
That's
something
right.
is missing. But then when something is missing and you're longing for it, that feels sometimes hopeless.
That's right.
But
That's
then
right.
you also said that it's in us.
And it's in us.
So as we become aware of these needs that we knew we needed, but somehow no one put it into words, it was just this vague feeling of something is missing, something is missing. And now, after we go through these, I would love to hear how just the knowing of them helps me know that not only that I can have them, that I have a right to them, but I do have them.
You have them. You have them. You're wired to experience them in life. And then once you come out of that sense that these are rights, you may realize you may have some repair work, you know, like in terms of how to be in a relationship, how to give, how to receive, and each one of those rights. Because if you don't practice them, you don't know what to do. But in that space of learning, you don't feel depressed. You feel, oh my gosh, I need to figure it out. And there are people who can teach you, your friends, your spouse, your buddies, your therapist, they can teach you. But you can move toward them. And as you do that, there's a pain of catching up. So as you read my book, The Listener, I'm a child of trauma for years, and nobody knew this. I lived in a dreamlike work because I was numb myself. So as I came out of that, I had so much repair work with my wife. We've been married 33 years. And as I came, I realized what a beautiful woman she is. And for years, I couldn't see her. I didn't see her beautiful eyes. She's a girl from Buffalo, New York. And so I keep telling my wife, and she says, stop, keep telling me you love me. So, honey, I have all these years to catch up, you know. But I feel alive. I'm here. I'm rooted. I'm in this moment present, catching up with life.
That is amazing. And you mentioned before you could say the words, I love you, but it's different now.
That's right.
You feel it.
That's right.
You see it. And it's like words are inadequate to describe, and you just want to say it over and over again because you feel fulfilled.
That's right.
Instead of empty.
That's right. That's right.
And so many people feel like I'm trying to get success. I'm trying to reach for whatever it is that is going to make me feel fulfilled because I feel empty. I feel that something is missing, and they're searching often in the wrong direction. It's not necessarily out there. It's in here.
It's here. That's right. That's right. Yeah. And then number of my clients are professionals. And as professionals, once you feel their emptiness, that there's a fulfillment you seek and you don't have it, you substitute that with the next role, next assignment, more money, more bonus, or people move toward addiction, substitution, infidelity, porn, other things that basically numb yourself. And so people call me and says that I cannot stop drinking. My mother was alcoholic, and it's the willpower. And I tell them, no, alcoholism is not about the willpower. It's about the disconnection to the emotional needs. Alcohol is a substitution. Drug is a substitution. Once you go, you find yourself that holds you steady. The same thing with body pain. Number of my clients, when we sit on pain, emotional pain, as our part of survival, the pain turns to physical pain. There's a reason for that. You know, having worked with clinicians from the trauma centers, physical pain is easier to handle than emotional pain. So we know many women have gastrointestinal complication, men cardiovascular, sudden heart attack, shoulder pain, all the way to neck, jaws, all of that. It's basically you, your body, and your soul is speaking. At a certain point, it gets stored in your tissues. The way you do the healing part is inviting your body to speak. Your body's holding on to memories. So once you do that, almost feels miraculous, but it's not. It's very basic biology. You see pain, shoulder pains, backs that is sore, things start to shift, moves. And after sometimes a few days, it dissolves because it's expressed in emotions. It's a reason that it's a staggering statistics. Every day across the United States, in adult primary care, up to 1/3 of visits of adult is depression related. Doctors know it. So they go for MRI, different tests, painkiller, medication, and the patient is back. There's nothing wrong with them. These are emotional related pain. And after a while, our bodies start to break down. You need to go to the root and basically set your soul free. And you see the pain dissolves and basically dissipate.
Talk about a win-win. Yeah. When here we hurt, we're aching, we feel miserable, we feel depressed, we feel empty. And then when we address the root of the problem, then the other things naturally take care of themselves. Right. A lot of times our body is hurting because, as you mentioned, it is that physical manifestation. And I've read even the reports on the CDC website that they assume that about 90% of our physical ailments are psychosomatic. They're based on stress. They come from our emotions that are made manifest in our bodies. And that is not just, you know, somebody's theory. This is documented. This is reality.
That's right.
And so I would love, let's talk a little bit more about, let's get to this core. Let's feed these needs.
That's right.
So we can feel happy.
Yeah.
And we can feel healthy.
Yeah.
And we can feel fulfilled.
That's right. So those seven needs, as I mentioned them, and I'm going to start to mention them and tell the story behind them. These are not cognitive, the construct that say that is your job satisfaction, high and low. These are experiences that you have felt experiences. We feel them inside, like your gut, your heart, the way you feel it. The very first need that happens at birth or even before there is the need to belong, for your body to belong, for your eyes when you look at the world, there are a pair of eyes that looks back at you with smiling, is available, welcomes you, is present and patient for you to just do whatever you're doing and holds you, suits you, brings joy back to you. Because in that moment, when you see the world, mother or a guardian, and that person looks back at you, what you see that I'm good, I'm here, I'm safe, my needs are being taken care of. And you start to develop a sense, I belong to you, you belong to me, and very soon I belong to the people around me. So what I share with you is for textbooks. It doesn't happen for majority of people. We learn, we come to this world, mom is busy, sometimes mom is not there, there's a stress, financial stress, sometimes moms, they didn't get that. That was my sense. So you go a sense that you look for affection, for attention, for eyes, and you keep looking around and it's not there. Or just get a glimpse of that, it doesn't come back. Or is impatient, or somebody says, come on, I just, you know, cuddle you. So you learn that there's a conditional love for you. Many people go to this world and feel isolated, disconnected. They don't know what it means to be loved, to give love and see that and reciprocate that. They go to the world of work and relationship. They become, you know, attachment style. They become clingy. They become anxious, or they're overwhelmed. So different ways we show up in this world. But the part of the need that your need is to be loved, to be part of a community. It's your community. And you go there, they see you, you're honored, and you're seen and loved and say, these are my people, these are my tribe, as you are, as you are. And this can start, actually, you can start to nurture it. Many of us didn't have it, but you can to begin to form love and connection, sheltering. The next need, I am boundless. This is about our bodies. This is actually a scientific rupture that happened around the time of Industrial Revolution, that we became talking heads or a person doing something, but with the whole separation of brain, mind, and body. Throughout the mankind, we lived in villages, farms, fields, and so on. We did things with our entire body. We were physical beings. In 20th century, these days, our brain, our bodies basically is a vehicle to move our brain around. What we don't realize, and this is what the science showing up, we actually feel with our bodies. We experience, we even think with our entire bodies. That what research shows, we in our brain, we use words. I feel sad, I'm happy, and I'm anxious, depressed, so on. Emotions are in the body, not in the brain. Or that's the reason we have pain in our body, sense of sensation, butterflies. We don't have the, we haven't been taught how to use the wisdom of the body. And that's the reason therapy takes a long time. By sitting and talking therapy actually is not healing you. The way to do therapy, you need to act, you need to be, you need to show, you need to work through trauma, come out of it. So in the space behind me, see, it's a big office, long office. So when patients come here, most of the time they're standing up, they're doing downward dogs, that they say, I'm angry. I will invite them, show me anger. Where's in your body? How does it look like? And when you work through the healing, develop body movement, body memory, so you can actually help people be integrated, mind, body, and soul. So this is about leverage your body. That's your the best instrument. We haven't been taught what is all about how to use your body. Next need is I am complete. Many people, for a long time it was me, go through life burdened with regret, with shame. I wish that happened. I wish I had a better mom. I wish I had more money. I wish I wasn't hurt. What we know is that we could have been hurt badly, but you have everything to be okay right now. The modality of healing, it shows that, and we know from science, neurology, we only live in this moment. Our bodies that feels the emotions only lives in this moment. Our body has no memory. So if you're sitting on pain and trauma, your bodies think that trauma is happening right now, which means the healing that happens, going doing the talk therapy, tell me what happened to you then and there. You can do what can happen right now for you to claim you, your emotions, your boundaries, your wholeness. You do reconstruction in microsecond, in this moment, and create the reality that for whatever reason didn't happen to you. You were born to be reborn every moment. You can create your destiny over and over again. We haven't been taught that. So you are complete and you can create that. The next need is I matter. This is about dignity, respect, honor. You live uptown, you live downtown. You live here, you live in that country, different ethnicity. You are here and all the rights, all the appreciation is bestowed upon you. There are so many people in our society that they are invisible. I worked in the corporate environment. You would see, and I would see people enter the conference room. Nobody would turn around, call their name, have eye contact with them. They're almost like ghosts coming in and going out. This is about us seeing each other. Let I see you, see your expression, calling your name, saying that, Linda, what do you think about this project? What are your opinion about this one? Your idea or could be the worst idea. Nonetheless, they're your ideas. Welcome them. Share your point of view. Bring you into the fold of humanity versus the boss decides everybody follows. We've lost the sense that we all have a place around the table. And for us to live our lives like that. Then the next need is I make. This is about the labor of love. Work is love made visible. We all are doing something in this world. We all do. Whether you are executive, you're a farmer, you're making medicine, you're a soldier, teacher, we are doing something. The things you're doing, is that your work? Or are you doing it to pay the bill, to get by? That's all you had. We all have done that. I've done that over and over. Doing the work made good money, but it was not my work. That will be punishing to our soul, to our body, to your God's gift. You're here. What is the thing you need to do that says, oh my gosh, this is me that makes you come alive? The reason we read all those books about Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, all of that, deep down, we know we are just like them, even better. But we're glamorizing them that there are those people who do their own things. I don't want to read about Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates. I want to read about you because you have everything to be just as good in your own way. You're a story. You are a story. The next need is the need I am. This is your voice. This is Katy Perry's song, I Roar. That what is your roar song? That you have a belief. There are convictions you have. You have messages. You have wisdom. We go to certain people thinking about what you think. We all have wisdom. What are your beliefs? Many of us hold that back to be safe, to be not be ridiculed or be shamed or scorned. That hurts us. Once we share our opinion, again, could be the worst ideas in the room. What is your opinion? Do you feel liberated? Because there's a reason you have those ideas. And the final one is I soar. Maya Angelou has a saying in her book, I Know Why the Caged Birds Sing, that there is no greater agony than burying an untold story inside you. This is in the moment of your death. All of us will go there. When you look back, did you know your story? Did you live your story in this world? I have loved ones who in their deathbed, they says, I wish I could have done this, this, this. You have a story. 8 billion people, 8 billion stories. Once you know your story, we will be unshackled. You'll be a force. That this is about finding your story. And people say, Arshi, where do I start? You know, do I need to retreat, all of that? And I tell them, the story typically, it comes about you shift something in this world. You make it different, right? Where I'm sitting right now, there are trees that I planted outside my garden. You do something in this world, you shift it for other people. This is not about going to seclusion and reading books and writing poetry. This is about you make a difference in this world, that you have an impact, that others see that, your loved ones see that. So all these needs, we have them in our own story, in our own villages, towns, schools, cities. And people call me and says, oh my gosh, there's 7 of them. I already have such a busy schedule. Where do I start? And I tell them, the way it works, usually there's an energy between 3 of them. First of all, you follow the energy, what comes up. Usually as you're sitting right now, dear listeners, there's a need that is your northern light that calls you, excites you. Oh my gosh, I want more of that in my life. I know it. I've been longing for that. Please, please, please give it to me. Then there's a need that makes you heavy. It torments you, brings you regret, brings you heaviness. That's the work, repair work to do. And then there's a need of a stability. What feeds you? What stabilizes you? What keeps you steady? So you want to use these 3 needs as a way to guide yourself going forward. For example, right now for me, the need that fuels me is the need I soar. This work, I didn't know I'd be doing this work. And a certain moment start to gel, I realized this is not my work anymore. I need to write this book, give it to the world. So there's a lot more coming that the world needs to know that that fuels me, that excites me, that I get really obsessed about it. What makes it heavy? I'm literally building a new way of therapy that is a lot faster. People who do this work, you don't need long-term therapy, weeks and months and years. In a matter of 5, 10, 15 sessions, you do, whoa, you come alive, you're good to go. So maybe getting this, teaching others, making sure people know this, so we should not be suffering as humanity. And the one that keeps me a study, my family, my wife, my son, my golden retriever, Lucy, my family, the friends that I go to, they are my backbone. Whenever I'm in doubt, which it's a lot, many times I go to them, they say, Arashir, stay the course. You're doing great. You're doing just fine. So follow the energy between those three and guide and see what comes up for you. Don't overthink it. Just follow the energy.
That helps so that it doesn't feel overwhelming.
That's right.
As you list all of these things, and I'm sure for myself and other people who are listening, as you mention one or two, it's just, oh, yes, I need that. Oh, I want that. Oh, I whatever. Yeah. And there are many of them. And I also really loved and appreciated that you said, this doesn't have to be long term.
Yeah.
There is an end.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a huge distinction between coping and healing.
That's right.
Because when we heal the core, then everything is better.
Yeah.
And if we are just coping and dealing with the symptoms, whatever is inside making those symptoms is going to continue to make those symptoms. And so it's beautiful and exciting know that there is a way to address our core needs.
That's right. That's right.
And when we feel those needs met, then other things fall into place.
Exactly. Exactly. You will say. And then there are people who, in my different workshops, or they actually write and say that. So, Arashir, you mean you don't get depressed anymore? My answer is always the same. I do get depressed, but it's different this time. So when you get depressed, when I sit down and reflect, why am I depressed? I realize one of those needs, I'm playing small, that I'm just don't know what to do, or self-doubt, which goes to all those years of me being in the dormant or like daydreaming state. It's coming up, and it basically means that get up, do the work. And basically, I've been just playing small. And once you says, that's why depression is, and why that depression comes back. Depression is a signal that you need to wake up. It's your own soul, SOS signal, save your soul. It's basically marine signal, says save me. So those times says, Arashir, you're going to wilderness, you're playing small. Get up, dude. Do the work.
And that goes along with the title of your book. It's, you are not depressed, you are unfinished.
Finish your work. Do the work. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And when we talk about depression, that word can mean a whole spectrum of things. It can mean, man, I had a bad day, I am very discouraged. Or it can mean just when you're underwater all the time.
That's right.
And so, as you mentioned, it doesn't mean that you're never going to feel discouraged or have a bad day again. Yeah. We can't really control that. Yeah. But it means you are resilient.
That's right.
You are healthy.
That's right.
So that when something comes, it's a bad day, it's a bad moment, and not a bad lifetime.
That's right. So that's a great point, Linda, that when you see depression, to simplify, if you think about the normal curve, there are three types of depression. One is depression, you go to a job loss, the accident, a loved one passing. This depression is when there's a loss happen or event you didn't plan for it. And we all experience it. And it's a part of the life renewal that is usually we come out of it. You know, that right now in our society, there's so much upheaval, the news of the world, that it's sense of why things are bad, why this happened to me. We come out of it. The other part of the depression is that clinical depression. These are the time that when we sit on a depressive state for a long time, our brain chemistry, brain cellular structure, our physiology deteriorate, because really what is happening, we are mimicking death. That's a time that the suicides start to come in. We're basically disconnecting gradually from the world, connection of our needs, and we are more or less, we're checking out from work. That's the time we need proper clinical care. There's a curve in between. that from my estimate, we don't have data, is between 40 to 50% of people, this is elevated level of depression. Feels like a level of heaviness. There's a darkness. There's a sense of low energy or restlessness that it just lingers, doesn't go away. And for majority of people, we tolerate that. We get by. I mean, people write me and says, I'm a senior executive. I've been depressed all my life, and yet I keep managing to go higher and higher, do well. But people have become like an old friend that you learn how to cohabit. What we don't realize, that old friend is doing damage to your body, to your gut, to your lungs, to your health, to your vitality, to your romance. Because you're smiling, you're doing well, doesn't mean that actually you're okay. That's the focus of my work, telling those people that depression actually tells you there's more mojo inside you. There's more greatness inside you. You're just tolerating a given state. Don't do that. Don't do that. There's more in you that you were allowed to experience, dear friends.
And this is a wake-up call.
This is a wake-up call.
There is joy.
Yeah.
There is joy available.
Yeah.
And it is available for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want it and you can have it.
You can have it. It's your right. It's your right. It's just waiting there for you. Go have it. You know, don't. It's almost the way somebody's coming to civic right. No, it's your right. Protect it. Claim it.
And we have to do the work. We have to wake up. Yeah. And we have to do the work.
That's right.
So it is a right that we can't say, all right, now that I know that this is my right, I need Dr. Moran to give it to me. It's no, right. No. It is my right.
It's your right.
And where I find it
is
here.
It's here. And your story is different than mine and Linda's. You're right. And your creation will be beautiful and it will be different and is all yours. And once you do that, that's how you shift the generational trauma. That's my next book, which I will write it to start to finish my research next year, that when we don't do that right, when our rights are compromised, what we don't realize, that's how exactly our parents were. We learn from them. Once you shift equation, you set the different trajectory for your own family, for your own the loved ones, that you can make a difference for generations ahead.
You know, and that's such a beautiful thing that you brought up, that it is generational. And you mentioned at the very beginning, when we're talking about these rights, that we want to belong, that we want to have our parents just hold us and love us. And that doesn't always happen. In fact, it's very common that you don't get that. And part of it is because our parents didn't get that.
That's right.
And you can't give what you don't have.
Yeah.
And so the cycle continues generation after generation until someone in that chain makes a different choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Chooses to heal themselves.
Yeah.
Chooses to get their own needs met.
Yeah.
And once we are full, then we have something to give.
That's right.
To the next. And we can break those chains. We can change that directory. And that is, it's a wonderful thing to know. And it also is a responsibility.
It is.
As we recognize that our default mode is to just continue the pattern that was given to us.
Yes. There's a saying, and I shared that in my book. I don't remember the author, that the best gift we can give our children is our own healing. Once we do that, they have a gift that keeps giving for them. That's the best gift we can give to our own children.
Oh, that's beautiful. And that makes it feel like this caring about myself is not selfish.
That's right.
It's actually a gift that I give to not only myself, but to those around me, particularly my family, my loved ones. And then it will carry on to the people that I work with and the people that I have influence with.
That's right.
Oh, this has been amazing. Is there anything else you want to make sure we cover before we close today?
A couple things. One is that get to know the Bill of Rights. When you go to my website, there's information. Get to know them. And you may not only read them because people process, actually say them in your own words. People have said that when I say them, suddenly my body starts to tingle, suddenly my heart, my, you know, like, you know, so hear it and personalize it. You all have a story. Where are you calling from? Your age, your gender. Let it, you see them, let it, is invitation. This work belongs to you. I wish years ago somebody, this work existed to help me. So to do that, then follow the energy. You don't overthink it. You already know the answer. See what excites you. Whatever calls you, follow the energy. Follow that thing, that one step. Yeah, that's the one. And then when you go on my website, ArtashirMehran.com or HumanWorkStudio, my business.com, all this information is there. And follow my blogs next week, this coming week, this Friday, I will be posting a blog on my website. It's about trauma. We've overcomplicated trauma. It's almost becoming woo-woo-y and like rather difficult to understand. It's complex, it's not complicated. Once you understand trauma, you can see its imprint on you or others, and then how do you reverse engineer it? Use the science to reverse engineering the bad stuff that we end up absorbing in life. So I invite you to follow me and use this information to live better, to feel better, to do more in your life.
What a beautiful, beautiful hope. We can live more and we can be happier. We can have. So thank you for sharing these resources. Like you said, you wish you had this growing up. You wish you had it. But now, because of you, there are other people who do have it.
That's right. That's right.
And that is fantastic. So thank you for all that you have done. And thank you for visiting with me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Linda.
In closing, I'd like to share a quote from Plato. He said, "Love is the name for our pursuit of wholeness, for our desire to be complete." Today, I invite our listeners to pursue and enjoy wholeness and love. See you next time on Linda's Corner.
Thanks for listening. Please share and subscribe to help us reach new listeners. And if you'd like to heal your life from the inside out, there is a free video series at hopeforhealingfoundation.org. Just click on the free stuff tab. I also invite you to grab a copy of one of my books, like Crushed, A Journey Through Depression, and You Got This, an action plan to calm fear, anxiety, worry, and stress. See you next time on Linda's Corner.